Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, our guest today is Jared Thornton of Adopt the Web, who is an award-winning web designer, experience developer, and webmaster. Since 2008, he has worked with more than 100 companies planning and executing effective web-based services. When he isn't glued to a computer screen, Jared spends time working with men in recovery, enjoying the outdoors, and spending time with his sons. His biggest goal in life is to be an outstanding father, friend, and companion. Today, we're going to be discussing Jared's journey as an entrepreneur and how he's grown his agency. So thanks so much for joining us today, Jared.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So first of all, where are you tuning in from today?
I'm in Lexington, Kentucky.
Very nice. Awesome. And what would you say motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
I think having a little more control of my destiny in terms of the lifestyle that I lead. And, you know, at the end of the day, let's face it, funding my life.
Yes. I love that. And how did you originally get into digital marketing?
I worked for a company that sold products online. So they did their SEO, they did, you know, newsletters and so forth. But I didn't work directly in the marketing department. I was a production manager. Actually, I started out just doing production. I was twisting caps on bottles. But I was really interested in the guys that were behind the computers in the marketing office. And during break hour, I would just chit chat with them. And, you know, I talked to the guy that managed the database and wrote code. And I talked to the guy that did the graphics for the newsletters. I talked to the guy that worked with the affiliate network, you know, and just picked their brains. And in my free time after work, I think this was 2006, 2007, I had a copy of Dreamweaver and just plugged it around and started playing with figuring out how to build a website.
Very cool. And then, so tell us a little bit more about your story of starting Adopt the Web.
Well, it goes way back. I won't go into a lot of the gory detail, but if you go back to the days of MySpace, that's kind of where a lot of this started, because back then, you know, MySpace had this customizable homepage. You could actually do HTML and CSS. And I love the idea of being able to like tweak design with stuff. And so back then I actually had a MySpace page that was along the lines of the same thing. Adopt the Web is an assumed name of our limited liability corporation, Imagine. So it started off with Imagine Anything. It ended up being, at first, it ended up being a PC repair business that I operated from home.
I didn't
really enjoy the working on other people's devices as much as I enjoyed working on my own, as it turns out. Mm-hmm. So that quickly evolved into starting my first business, which wasn't Imagine, with a business partner in 2008 called Green Thumb Marketing. Mm-hmm. And we effectively did what Adopt the Web does today. Partnerships can be difficult. You know, not everybody wants the same thing. And both of us grew. We learned a lot from that experience. I ended up going out on my own in 2010 and mm-hmm. starting Imagine.
Nice.
And then I did freelance. I think that was really, for me, one of the more important pieces of getting started was, you know, I didn't have, I didn't have the education. I was just self-taught. And then second, I didn't have a lot of money. I just had, you know, a computer and the internet and a willingness to learn. And so I started freelancing back then, and, you know, I had set up the LLC. And so, you know, you fast forward and we just grew from there. And I really did everything myself. I had a few contractors up until about 2020. And I'm happy to go into more detail on any point of that.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. And one thing I love about digital marketing is you really can teach yourself everything you need to know. You know, as long as you've got that willingness to learn, all the information is out there. So that's really cool to hear that you're self-taught. And so how does Adopt the Web differentiate you? How do you differentiate yourself from other agencies?
Well, so going back to the whole freelance thing, I started doing work for agencies and I started recognizing a lot of bottlenecks that I think your traditional, you know, digital marketing agency has. And, you know, lots of times with the organization, just on the project management level, there are so many moving pieces in this industry today. So a digital marketing agency will come in and typically a small business, they'll be looking for somebody to carry a lot of weight, to wear a lot of hats. So as a digital marketing agency, we find ourselves having to be very diverse in what it is we do. And it's very difficult to say no to providing a solution for a business. And I think what I ended up doing, and I started building a team around myself. I started finding qualified, skilled people who were really good at, you know, one or two things that I could then delegate to them. And, you know, we came up with procedures and standards of operation and basically got really, really organized. I think what we wanted to do was get more organized than any other agency that we had worked with.
Nice.
And that was kind of built on the experience I had as a freelance back in the day.
Yeah, such a good point. Yeah, having those systems and procedures are just so important. And just help streamline your operations. So what would you say were the biggest challenges that you had to overcome in the early days?
So early days for me, when I think about Adopt the Web, isn't the freelance days. It's when I had the first full-time staff person working alongside me. Mm-hmm. We have 9 now, 4 of which are full time. And I think the biggest challenge was figuring out how to be okay with not doing everything myself the way that I'm used to doing them, even with those standards and the systems in place. And then from there, because all of a sudden I found it was a challenge to figure out with our own revenue how to support, you know, not just paying myself but then paying other people, to switch from, and this is a crazy switch that we made, but we switched from doing quotes. We don't do quotes anymore. We do everything by the hour, billing in arrears. That was the single most fundamental change that we made in our approach, was to provide time estimates and then build out from there.
Interesting.
Because I was faced with either just walking away, because getting a deposit, a 50% deposit, and then a 25 and a 25 or however that works, as I did when I was freelance, just didn't work when I had the overhead of running a small business myself. So making sure that money was coming in, regardless of, you know, 'cause I'm sure every other digital marketing agency can relate to the creep. And no matter what you do,
yeah,
a business's needs will evolve and change over the course of, 3-month project. So.
Interesting. No, that's really interesting. And then if you had one growth tip that you could share with any other up and coming agency owners, what would that be?
A growth tip. I think, you know, we're still fairly new. I mean, we're going into our third year, structured the way that we're structured. Mm-hmm. The thing that if I could go back and tell myself, you know, a couple years ago, is that, you know, everything's gonna be fine. You just keep putting your best foot forward. You know, it's always a risk to be, to run your own business. And, you know, to not be scared to take those little risks here and there. When you want to hire somebody new, when you want to try somebody out, you know, just kind of like, that's the only way you're going to grow and scale, is if you grow and scale. So
yeah,
don't be scared.
Awesome. Yep. You just got to get out of that comfort zone and just do the thing that scares you and make it happen.
Yeah. Try new things. This industry changes so frequently. What, you know, what we've adopted today as something that we, with Review Robin, for example, you know, it's been a few years now that everybody's accepted that for a small business that has a lot of, you know, local based traffic and advertising, getting those reviews are paramount to just about anything else. So, totally. You know, there are services that help you get those reviews. And I would say, you know, we've had to work alongside our clients to help them understand the importance of not only getting those reviews, but to effectively get those reviews. So that's one small example. I mean, there, you know, you talk about hosting, you want to talk about paid advertising, Google AdWords. Mm-hmm. There are so many things to help you save time and money to help your clients get what they need and where they need to go. And don't be scared to try them out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And don't be afraid to even talk to, you know, the companies that you're dealing with, because I feel like not enough business owners or agency owners do that. You know, like in our case, if someone was straight up with us, like, you know, like, I want to try this out for a month, you know, we're willing to negotiate things as well. And, you know, it's just a matter of asking and seeing where the conversation goes. So like you said, not being afraid, getting out there, trying new things, and yeah, not being afraid to ask for things as well.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about your sales strategies a little bit as well. So what does your sales strategies look like within your agency? How are you bringing in more business?
Sure. You know, we're still at a growth stage where it makes absolute zero sense to spend any money on paid advertising. It's just too competitive,
right?
Way too expensive. And you know, once you do start spending money on that, the overhead there is just, I mean, right now I can't imagine trying to figure that piece of the puzzle out for ourselves. So what we've depended on are a couple of things. One, we're really good, our agency specifically, we're really good at the technical side of things. We're good at fixing development problems, solving complex hosting situations. We're good with numbers. We're good with analytics of data and that side of it. So, you know, some of our agency clients that we work with, they're really good at design. They bring more to the table when it comes to design, more so than say implement of that design. So I think right now, when there's maybe a time of stagnation in my direct to business clients, so clients that I go out and get here in the community, or, you know, we work of course across the entire United States, someone finds us on Google, they call us. So those types of inbound sales, our relationships with other agencies, you know, are oftentimes one of the more valuable assets to for our sales. Not the most profitable, because we discount our rates for working with agencies.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's consistent, it's reliable, and it provides us with stable work. And we get to learn too. I mean, and I love the relationships that we get to develop. Every once in a while, an agency partner is not well equipped to take on a specific client, and sometimes mm-hmm. we are. And so, and vice versa. You know, price points can even be one of those situations where maybe a client has a much larger budget than we would really be able to take on. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. And, you know, there's an agency partner's looking at a client that's got a budget that doesn't really fit what they're looking to do. And so I think those strategic partnerships have been invaluable to us. Otherwise, you know, it's been for us 100% referrals, just doing really good work. And communication. Yeah, I don't think you're going to, you know, as a digital marketing agency, if you communicate really effectively with your clients and you always show up to the conversation and you're there for them, even if you make mistakes along the way, you'll go a lot further than if, you know, something happens and you run into an issue with a budget or something and then ghost them. Especially if you're really small, maybe a freelancer who's looking to get into the digital marketing agency game, don't run away. We see so many people run away and ghost their clients, and that's like the worst possible thing to do. Never do that. Always find some kind of resolution. From there, I would say, okay, now what can we do for you know, inbound or outbound sales? And what we've adopted is, again, I mentioned we're more of technical side. Like our team, most of us are way more technical. Like we're the nerds. We like to go out and find, you know, let me preface this by saying, you know, that by supporting WordPress, for example, and some of these popular theme builders, I'm an advocate for them simply because of the fact they've been adopted and they're just a standard. They're an industry standard at this point. I'd be a fool to not support WordPress. WordPress is a slug sometimes if it's not well maintained, well developed. And I see plenty of websites pop up that are built on these platforms. They're not well maintained. That being said, supporting them and really knowing your way around can actually provide a lot of you. Someone sends us a very technical question with some code, it's good to have an answer for that. What we'll do is we'll do a Google search for these websites that have been hacked, and we'll find, I mean, it's literally a Google search away to find a website that's been compromised that's on a shared GoDaddy hosting platform. It takes us a couple hours maybe to clean it up and build some rapport with the business if we can get them on the phone or whatnot. But, you know, if I'm bored, I'll sit down, I'll go find them. There are some really good, there's some really easy search operators to finding these, to finding existing websites that may have been built by a freelance person who disappeared. So that's another thing, you know, you disappear on your client, you're leaving that client open to work with somebody who will take care of it. And that's low hanging fruit. You find someone who's been burned by the last guy, even if you don't initially have a ton of money in it. So you end up discounting some of the work that you do for somebody just to prove to them that working with a web developer or digital marketing agency is not a, because some of us have a really bad name in this industry. We just don't do right by people. But then there are agencies, I believe, like ours, where I'll come in and for the first 3 months, I won't make a dime on doing work for them. I mean, I'll charge them money, of course. But I'll take a hit on the profit margin for the first 3 months just to show them that we're different and we'll take care of them and that we're here for the long run, for the long term. 2 years later, they're one of our best paying clients. You know, they're in the top tier of our paying clients. They're paying us. They started out, maybe you can host our website. Why don't you fix it first? Now we're doing their SEO, their paid advertising, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as far as sales, for a small digital marketing agency, that's probably been what's helped us the most, or those type of finding the needs and then meeting those needs.
And like you mentioned, it's just so important to build that trust early on in that working relationship, because there are so many freelancers out there just giving the whole digital marketing industry a bad rap. So really building that relationship, that trust early on, I think is so important. And then do you have a success story of, you know, just taking advantage of that low hanging fruit, like you mentioned, where you were able to reach out to someone and, you know, just inform them that their website had been hacked and sort of how that played out?
Sure. Yeah. So
you don't have to share any names of your clients or anything like that though.
No, it's fine. The hacking thing. Okay. So that's a good one, because you're already going in to deal with someone who may not even realize that their site's been compromised. A lot of these, you know, like right now, GoDaddy is being attacked. Their shared hosting platforms are being attacked, and these WordPress websites are being targeted for this unique type of malware that doesn't impact the website itself if you're on the website. So as a business owner, if I go to my website, I typically just go to the domain. I don't do a Google search. But the way that this malware works is if you do a Google search for your business and someone clicks on your business website from a Google search, it redirects you to a third-party site that's advertising, like Cialis or something like that. So as a business owner, you may not even realize it. So sometimes you're going in and you're the bearer of bad news. You know, it's not a situation where, oh yeah, we know we're hacked and we need your help. It's like they may not even know, and you're bringing them bad news. So you have to be really careful because not everybody's going to understand. And you know what? You just put the filler out there and send them a link to reviews that people have left for you helping them, and just kind of like let it go. But there have been occasions when we've gotten a client who asked us to just, hey, so such and such said you do WordPress. Can you make some changes on our job postings page? You know, sure. Mm-hmm. That gives me an opportunity once I get a login and password and assign someone on our team to take care of. What I'll often do is have one of our devs go in and just do a real quick look over. What are they running as far as a theme, some plugins? Are they maintaining and updating it? No, they're not. Send them a note back saying, hey, by the way, I noticed that this is what you have going on your back end. FYI, GoDaddy doesn't support these updates for the software, and you know, if there's ever any vulnerabilities. Case in point, this actually happened earlier this year in January, and then in earlier this month I got an email saying, hey, one of our customers said that when they came to look for us, that they clicked on a link and it ended up on a Cialis website, and I looked into it and sure enough it was. And so that kind of, you know, and I had already pitched them on, you know, like letting us help manage and maintain and keep secured and updated software, because a hosting company like GoDaddy doesn't provide that type of service. Right. Now that's, you know, we charge like $25 a month for that service with a small little sign up fee, and we removed the malware and did the migration included in that cost. And that's going to be a good client for us moving forward. It opens the doors for other conversations. That's such a small little, just that's probably like not even low hanging fruit. That's like I walked up and picked an apple up off the ground. It was already, you know, I had to cut half the apple off to salvage some of the fruit. And there's a lot of work that goes into just the logistics of putting that together. But on a separate scale, to get and give you a different type of success story with meeting clients' needs. So finding a client where they are and meeting them. I talked about getting burned by other digital marketing agencies. And I had somebody who just, you know, was working with this guy who's got this business, you know, and this business looks successful on the outside. They look like they've got everything together. You know, they're doing it big. And, but this client, he just noticed a trend of poor communication. And then when he started asking questions, the owner of this agency got really dodgy and defensive. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what mattered is that this client wasn't getting their needs. They weren't having their needs met. So they came to us and they were already not happy. We got in there, took a look at it. We saw what had been done on the back end that the client had no idea about. And, you know, they had spent around $10,000 on a website that was probably a $1,200 build because everything got just contracted out to a really poor development team offshore, which I'm not against that kind of contracting, but if it's not done well or executed well, like you're just setting your client up for complete failure. Totally. And that's exactly what happened here. So we came in and it was like, man, it was just, we had to go back and fix a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't necessarily discount the work, but I worked with the guy and just did what needed to get done and advised on what to do. Now, because this guy had already been burned by this particular client, and then he had been burned by a digital marketing agency before that. I don't know. He just had like two bad runs with these other companies.
Yeah.
You know, here I am, I'm getting ready to try to sell him SEO, which is what he was paying for with these other companies, and, you know, to go in and actually do it right. And his expectations, I mean, he was angry at me. I mean, he wasn't angry at me, but like his anger, I mean, I felt it, and I was like, I mean, I wasn't scared, but I was just like, oh man, like I kind of wanted to walk away from it because I just, you know, this guy's expectations are, but I took that as a personal challenge because I knew that if I could turn this experience around for him, that this would be a loyal customer. And this is for anybody who's getting into this game, you know, early on, these are the type of learning experiences that'll make a difference down the road, I think, like huge difference down the road. So yeah. We're almost 2.5 years. We're actually going in almost into the third year of working with this client, and they're one of our best paying and happiest clients. I got a call from them just the other day because they want to start doing a little bit more with video marketing on their YouTube channel.
Awesome.
And you know, I don't hear from him anymore. I don't have to take his phone calls because guess what? The website's working, the advertisements are working, he's getting the type of leads that he wants. You know, reviews have been a big piece of the puzzle for him as well. They've got 4 locations in our area. We worked with them to help their staff, like get those extra reviews that they needed to kind of push them a little further and be more responsive to them. And it's worked. They're so busy that you know, he's even jokingly stated that we might need to cut back a little bit in some places. And so for anybody out there listening, I would say, you know, find that personal challenge and take it as far as you can to turn it around for somebody. It's very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you have any tips for, you know, just doing some damage control whenever you do have a client like that, who's really, you know, they've been burned and they have zero trust in the industry, zero trust in your ability to effectively offer them SEO. How do you build that trust quickly and help turn that working relationship around?
Patience, putting yourself in their shoes. So having empathy, if you've ever been burned by, you know, I mean, one thing I think about is the experience I have when I have to call my internet provider or my phone carrier or, you know,
the bank.
But then, right? But then every once in a while, you get that person on the phone who is all about their job. You know, they go above and beyond to make sure that your needs are met. And the one thing that they do is they have a tone of voice with you and they have patience with you and they work you through understanding and resolving whatever issue it is that you have. Do that for them, for your client. And I think that goes further than anything. I've had situations where it was pretty rough in the beginning. And if it were like a personal relationship, you know, I'd have, like, I don't like want to have anything to do with this person. But when it's a small business, you know, and I know that there's a long-term opportunity there. Sometimes it's worth just kind of grin and bearing, and letting them feel the way that they need to feel, but then, you know, working them up to that point where, okay, here's your jump. And they either will jump or they won't jump. And if they do, of course, you know, be sure to take care of them and communicate, over-communicate.
Yes. Such great advice. Yep. I love that. Over-communicate and just be patient and have empathy. I love that. So where do you see Adopt the Web in 5 years' time?
Well, so we've taken every bit of extra revenue profit and just trying to grow the team and focus on those standards. And, you know, at the end of the day, I want to be scalable. I, more than anything, you know, I want to bring more people in that want to have the freedom of the lifestyle that I've experienced. Like, I'm not a wealthy person. I mean, I'm trying to build and establish wealth. I come from a very poor family and a poor childhood. And, you know, I talked about my education a little bit earlier and being self-taught. I wouldn't put myself as like this huge earning person. You know, I mean, I'm a working guy, but my goal is that with every new team member I bring on, I provide the same type of a working environment that I'm trying to create for myself. So I think the culture for our company has kind of been geared toward, you know, now that everything's remote and people are accepting the fact that it's going to be remote, you know, mm-hmm. we don't have the overhead of an office anymore, which has been really nice.
Yes.
And really focusing on that team build, you know, for every two people or three people that, you know, I give an opportunity to, you know, one of them shows up and shines, and, you know, that person gets the extra, they get the extra attention, they get the extra opportunity to, you know, do you want to take on doing this or you want to take on doing that, and focusing on building it as I go, as far as being able to scale that, because, you know, I'm still trying to take off hats. So in 5 years, I'd love to see us grow to, you know, break that $1 million mark. This year we might do, if everything continues to go the trend that it has for the last 2 years, we'll do $250,000, which I'm thrilled about. And so it's reasonable to expect that in 5 years, we could definitely be certainly be $1 million company. But I don't want to just be $1 million company and have, you know, huge anchor accounts or anything like that. So anyway, you know, I just see us, everything that I shared, I kind of just see us being a larger version of exactly what we are today, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very, very exciting things to look forward to.
Yeah.
So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
The last book I read that I feel like had a really good impact on me where I'm at now with the business is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, I believe is how you pronounce that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I took a vacation last year and went to Panama City Beach and spent a better part of, you know, my days out there on the sand reading that book. It was recommended to me and it was a great read for helping me to understand from the seat that I sit in, kind of maybe how to work with everybody that I'm bringing on my team.
Nice.
And I included a second one that's for like personal.
Okay.
Yeah, that I just thought I would throw out there. So, you know, I know we all have different backgrounds in America, you know, we're a melting pot. Everybody kind of has their own ideas and, you know, I have a Christian heritage. A friend of mine gave me a book called Discourses by Meher Baba. And there are some really, really interesting ways to look in at the world that I found in this book. There's a lot of information in this kind of helped me get through those days when, as a small business owner that works from home, works remote, right, and has to struggle with, like, you know, maintaining all of everything that's going on, giving me some fresh insights on how to perceive the world around me as I navigate personally.
Interesting. And then, so what was the name of that second book you mentioned?
Discourses. By Meher Baba.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome.
And it's Meher Baba.
Okay. Perfect. All right. And then, so what does your morning routine look like?
When I saw this question, I kind of laughed because it can vary a little bit, but typically there's no alarm. You know, my clock just kind of wakes me up, early enough and it's usually between 6:30 and 8:30. And depending on what's going on, like if I've got the kids or not, then, you know, it just varies, but typically I don't have to set an alarm. And it starts off with just a quick gratitude check, you know, the things that I have to be thankful for, even if I'm having a really hard time grappling with stress or uncertainties, those gratitude checks in the morning, keep me grounded. They start the day off right. And then of course I have to hit the cup of coffee, or a couple cups of coffee and kind of get started with, catching up on social media, news, you know, my phone, all these notifications. I use that as a filter to kind of go through and clean out my email or the Monday project board and Slack notifications and just get stuff out of the way so that when I actually sit down at the computer, I've got the most important stuff ready to go. And when I have my 2-year-old, which I have him 50% of the time. The routine is to get him to school and, that, you know, just spending some quality time with him, eating some fruit and, you know, having milk and stuff in the morning. That's my life right now. That's how my mornings start off. I don't have any crazy, you know, thing that I do. I'll exercise a little bit, you know, maybe some yoga a few times a week, but yep. You know, Hope that it doesn't disappoint.
No, not at all. You know, and it's a challenge to have those morning routines when you have kids. You know, it can be a little bit chaotic in the mornings, especially. So yeah, that's good that you're able to find that time to just kind of start things off and find that center. So is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Yeah, I keep up on some of the big names out there. And I think it's really interesting to learn the history of some of the big players out there now, especially in big tech. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to kind of see now that they are who they are, what they are doing with their wealth. But as far as like following them, keeping up with them, I don't think I've really found anybody, but I had to find somebody. And there's one entrepreneur that in history that has just always stood out to me. And it's George Westinghouse. And what really inspired me about George Westinghouse was the reform that he brought to the workplace and his out of the box thinking when it came to innovation. So I think more than anything, that guy, if I wanted to be like anybody, I think I really liked him.
I love that. And what is your favorite online tool?
I had to think about this one, and for business, and I realize I even use this personally, Monday.com. We use this for all of our project management, you know, the API, and just the how customizable it is, have completely changed how we organize things. So I really use that on every project, every campaign, and even on personal things. I have a 13-year-old son as well, and he and I maintain his Minecraft server.
Oh, wow.
And the things that we do on the Minecraft server using a Monday board. So I think that's probably my favorite online tool.
That's awesome. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Yeah, I think that the importance of surrounding myself with team-oriented and open-minded individuals, if I could go back, I would have told myself, you know, you don't need to do this alone. You're not alone. You just got to find the right people to get on board with you.
Yes.
If I had tried for, I tried for a better part of a decade to be solo. And as it turns out, having a team that I really enjoy working with makes work a little less like work. So.
Yeah, no, I love that. And also, you know, putting that ego aside and not being afraid to ask for help and ask for, you know, what do you think I can be doing to be improving in my role as this? I think is a really good point as well.
Yeah, I'll add on to that, that, you know, there's so many things that are synonymous with, you know, the our personal lives and our business lives, our professional lives. Mm-hmm. And I think I wish I would have known more about that as well, because today I'm a lot more vulnerable with myself than I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
When you talked about ego.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable with myself, especially in front of others, and being vulnerable to others, has actually made my life a lot easier. Those lows and those slumps are a lot more manageable, and the highs are a lot more enjoyable. So that's, I can't stress enough how being open, transparent, vulnerable with yourself and with those around, even your clients. Mm-hmm. I think when you introduced me, you used my bio where I talk about working with men in recovery.
Yeah.
You know, I have a history of substance use, and, you know, at one point I was an addict and an alcoholic, and that was a really low point for me in my life. And, today there are some relationships I have with business owners, you know, like this is a normal thing in our society. It's not a good thing, but it's a normal thing. And being open with that about, you know, with some of my clients, just like it comes up in casual conversation where like I see an opportunity to be open and vulnerable about some things and make it more personal. They love that. The team that I have, they love that about me. My clients, I mean, I've got clients who will even call me and say, hey, you know what? I got a guy, I really love this guy. He's one of the best workers I have. And he's started coming in late, and I had to just take him and drop him off at detox. And, you know, and it's like, I just never would have imagined years ago that I'd have a client just calling me up to shoot the breeze and talk about some personal stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it shows how much they trust me and how much they appreciate and value my input, because I'm willing to be open and I'm willing to be vulnerable and, you know, talk about those types of things. And I kind of went way, way out there, but it could just be really basic stuff, you know, just, you know, a lot of us are parents. A lot of us have relationships that can be problematic at times and that cause us personal struggles. And being just, you know, like someone asks you how you are, like, sometimes it's appropriate to let somebody know that you're struggling, because we're human and we struggle, and that can actually bring down a lot of walls. When we talked about building trust, kind of just append that to that part of our discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. It creates authenticity and just helps build those relationships, I think. So I absolutely love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jared. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.